A band of stars circles a snow-capped mountain peak, the word Paramount within the band and the words "a Viacom company" below it. Paramount Pictures presents a Mace Neufeld and Robert Rehm production. In a downbeat bayou harbour, a burly, clean-shaven army sergeant lies on a bed in a houseboat moored at a jetty. A Jonathan D. Crane production. A sergeant's cap and jacket hangs on a coat stand, and a Beretta pistol lies on the bedside table next to an ashtray. A Simon West film. The sergeant turns his head and looks at his digital alarm clock. It says 8 p.m.
Hope everybody's ready to go out and have a good time tonight. It's 8 p.m. Saturday evening, and it's still a hot one.
The sergeant turns the radio off and heads outside. He sticks a piece of nylon line over the door so he can tell if anyone's been in while he's out. John Travolta, Madeline Stowe, in The General's Daughter. Starring alphabetically, James Cromwell, Timothy Hutton, Leslie Stephenson, Daniel von Bargen, Clarence Williams III, and James Woods. John Beasley, Boyd Kessner, Brad Baer, John Benjamin Hickey, Rick Dial. A helicopter flies in low over an area of swampland. The sergeant looks up as it passes overhead. The helicopter touches down on a helipad as a motorcade pulls up. The sergeant, now puffing a cigar, drives an old blue Ford sedan away from the bayou. At the helipad, a three-star general gets out of the helicopter and salutes a group of officers waiting for him by the motorcade. The general shakes hands with one of the officers. The general's motorcade speeds past some convicts working on a chain gang. Outside an army base, some soldiers spring to attention as the general's motorcade sweeps into the base. The sergeant's car is stopped by an MP, or military policeman, outside the base as the motorcade goes in. Casting by Mindy Marin, music by Carter Burwell, associate producer Liz Kern. Once the motorcade has passed, the sergeant is waved into the base. He stops at a checkpoint.
ID, please.
He holds up a card.
First Sergeant White, please proceed.
I believe I will, thank you kindly.
Sergeant White drives on. Co-producer Stratton Leopold. Edited by Glenn Scantlebury. Director of Photography, Peter Menzies Jr. Based on the novel by Nelson DeMille. Executive producer, Jonathan D. Crane. Screenplay by Christopher Bertolini and William Goldman. Produced by Mace Neufeld. Directed by Simon West. The General's motorcade arrives at a large building on the base. In an extensive dining hall, the tables are laid and officers in dress uniform line them. They all stand to attention and applaud as the General, also in dress uniform, walks into the hall. The General, a tall, thin man in his early 60s, walks up between the tables, acknowledging the applause.
And now I give you a great general, a great friend, fighting Joe Campbell!
A stern-faced colonel, Colonel Moore, applauds vigorously, as does a younger officer, Colonel Kent, and a glamorous female captain, as General Campbell walks up to the podium. The officers sit down at the tables. General Campbell waits for silence.
Thank you all. As you know, my official retirement isn't until next week. But this here, now, tonight, with you, is my real retirement. Because you and I have known fear together, shed blood together, battled pain and suffering, and all of their foot soldiers. We know there is no glamour in a sudden death, and that no one ever wins a war. And it is that knowledge that will bind us together forever. That, and a love for this country that no bayonet can pierce, no bullet shatter.
The general raises his glass, and the officers all stand, raising their glasses. They all drink the toast. Mess orderlies remove silver covers from plates of chops and vegetables in a carefully synchronized movement. A caption, Fort McCallum, Georgia. Sergeant White is driving along in his car when his mobile rings.
Sergeant White here.
It's
Colonel Ken Brenner, so you can drop the cheesy southern accent.
Hey, the only thing keeping me alive is that cheesy southern accent.
Well, look, I was just checking up on my favorite guest detective. How you doing?
Oh, well, you know, Bill, I just love being undercover. It's great. Spent the last 2 weeks smoking cheap cigars and sweating my ass off in that shitty houseboat.
Well, you got any sort of time frame?
Yeah, I'm meeting Belling tonight in the armory, and then I'll arrest him on Sunday when we make the exchange.
Then I'm going back to Virginia.
All right, well, good enough. Watch your back.
Thank you. I believe I will.
Brenner puts his phone down and switches the radio on. The Ford's front onside tire blows. A little later, Brenner is kneeling by the side of the car trying to undo the wheel nuts with a pair of pliers. A military pickup truck pulls up across the road. It's driven by the glamorous female captain. She watches Brenner's attempts to loosen his Ford wheel nuts with amusement.
Out of gas?
Yeah. That's why I'm looking at a flat tire with a pair of pliers in my hand instead of a lug wrench.
He clocks a uniform. He stands up.
Uh-oh, she's a captain.
Uh-oh, she's a captain.
She shakes her head.
This looks like the work of 10 chimpanzees.
Well, you just missed the other 9. They got bored and went for a beer.
Well, I have a lug wrench. Can I try?
Well, if you don't, I'm going to drag you over.
She opens a toolbox in the back of the pickup and takes out a wrench, then crosses the road and begins to loosen the wheel nuts with the wrench. She catches Brenner smiling at her.
Get the spare.
Yes, ma'am.
He walks around to the trunk of the car, which has a Killing for Recreation sticker on it, and wheels the Space Saver spare tire around to the captain.
Golly day. If you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain, I'm just up to marry you, Captain.
She tightens up the wheel nuts.
You're going to have to take this in. This spare's just a temp tire. Won't be good for more than 30 miles or so.
Now, where would, if a fella got courageous and wanted to send you a thank you notion, a bobble, or a basket of fruit, where might one find you?
Psyops.
She gets up.
How's that?
Psychological operations. I teach there.
She puts the wrench away.
What do you teach?
Mostly we fuck with people's minds.
She grins, starts the pickup, and drives off. Brenner grins after the departing captain and shakes his head.
Damn.
He wheels his flat tire around to the trunk of the car. Later, the Ford pulls up outside an armory. Brenner walks into the building. Inside, he opens some boxes to show a man the contents. The first box contains 2 M60 heavy machine guns.
There you go. Genuine and made in the USA. All you gotta do is give Dalbert and me $100,000 each, and you'll see them guns come Sunday.
Rocket launchers.
You get your money, same time I get the guns.
Now you listen to me, funny boy. How do I know you ain't one of them army cops?
Hey, I'm a freedom fighter.
Well, check it out, Dalbert. We know again. What to do, a freedom fighter. Well, where's your cookie red hat, boy? Ain't never been a freedom fighter worth a guy being got him a cookie red hat.
You listen to me, stupid.
Dalbert, I think it's one of them Freudian...
What?
Brenner holds a knife to the man.
Hey,
Dalbert. What?
Want to hear a joke?
No. How many good freedom fighters does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I don't know.
Hey, come on, man. Relax, huh?
Well, you don't sound like no criminal investigator to me.
No.
Well, you all right, pal? I'm sorry about all that, but you know, we get a little jump around here before an exchange.
The man backs away.
So we'll see you Sunday, then.
I'll be there.
Yeah, you be there. All right.
Brenner turns to Dalbert.
Oh, unclench your ass cheeks, Dalbert. The scary part is over.
Brenner, in his sergeant's uniform, drives along in the Ford, puffing on a cigar. He parks up and gets out of the car, clutching a wicker basket decorated with a pink ribbon. He walks past a sign saying 5th Psychological Operations Instructional Detachment, 7th Psychological Operations Group, and goes into a building. In the captain's office, a green iguana sits on a branch in a vivarium munching bits of fruit. A badge on the captain's uniform says Campbell. Brenner walks in and stands to attention with his basket.
Don't tell me. You need your oil changed.
Nope. This is a token of my appreciation.
The basket is full of bath smellies. Grinning, Brenner sits down opposite Captain Campbell. She looks at the basket.
These are strange chocolates.
Bath products.
Bath products?
Mm-hmm.
Should I take a hint?
No, of course not. Just bath products. Everybody likes bath products.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Really? Tell me what you like about bath products.
Well, I like the pink soaps, and I like the skin softener, and I like the bath beads. I particularly like the bath beads. Sometimes I draw a tub, and I fill that tub with skin softeners and bath beads. I light a few candles. I put on a little Coltrane. I just soak my troubles away.
Very good, First Sergeant. I levied a none too subtle accusation of sexism at you, and you took it 3 times around the dance floor.
Not really. I just dig bath beads.
He raises an eyebrow.
Well, thank you. Maybe I'll see you around.
She starts writing.
Am I being dismissed?
Do you mind terribly? I've got a ton of work here.
He considers.
No. I just came by to give you that.
Thank you, sweet. How's the tire?
He grins at her and she smiles back.
Still rolling. Yeah.
I'm glad.
They smile at each other for a moment.
Well, goodbye, First Sergeant.
Goodbye, Captain.
He heads on out of her office and rolls his eyes. Shaking his head, he passes a room where a medic is preparing to inject a soldier with something. That night, Brenner is in his houseboat on the bayou. A dog watches as a pickup truck rolls down the road into the bayou's harbour. The truck parks up and the driver kills the engine and gets out. It's the freedom fighter, Belling, from the armoury. He looks over at Brenner's houseboat. In the houseboat, Brenner sits on the bed watching TV, the remote control in his hand.
Having announced his retirement, General Joseph Campbell is being considered for the vice presidency. Sources close to presidential candidate Bill Post tell us he is poised to select General Joseph Campbell as his running mate. Earlier this year, the general gave the commencement address at West Point. While it was meant to be a nonpartisan appearance, it certainly played like a stump speech.
Leading this country, that is your destiny.
On the news, the cadets throw their hats into the air and the general salutes, watching Brenner salutes too.
We'll be back for more in a moment.
A nearby lighthouse casts a shaft of bright blue-white light over the houseboat and the harbour. Belling walks stealthily along the quayside past an ice-making machine which churns out ice cubes. He makes his way onto a wooden walkway leading to Brenner's houseboat. Inside, Brenner lies asleep on his bed. Belling is carrying a silenced Ingram machine pistol. He holds it ready and steps onto the side of the houseboat, making a wind chime jangle. Inside, Brenner hears it and wakes up. He pulls his Beretta out from under his pillow. He stands up on the bed and pulls himself up through a skylight out onto the roof. A few seconds later, Belling comes in through the door and advances towards the bed. Up on the roof, Brenner points his gun down through the skylight. As Belling steps forward, he spots Brenner through the skylight and lets rip with the Ingram. Brenner runs for it, a line of bullet holes ripping up the roof of the houseboat after him. Brenner dives off the end of the houseboat into the bayou. Belling ejects his gun's spent magazine and inserts a new one. In the water, Brenner fumbles his hand along the bottom, searching for his lost gun. Seeing Belling come out of the houseboat, he ducks under the surface of the water. Belling climbs back onto the wooden walkway, and Brenner surfaces under another one nearby. He catches his breath and swims away again. He comes up under another walkway. Belling crosses a footbridge to it, and Brenner watches as he walks above him. Once he's passed, Brenner swims on. He comes up again where some small boats are moored. Belling drops down in front of him and Brenner ducks behind one of the boats. Felling fires a burst into the boat. Brenner yanks the starter cord of its outboard motor and swings the boat around. The outboard knocks Belling's gun out of his hands into the boat. Brenner throws himself at Belling and the two men struggle hand to hand. Brenner knocks his assailant's head into the side of the boat a couple of times, then loops the mooring rope around Belling's neck, but Belling pulls a knife and slashes at him. Brenner releases his grip on the mooring rope, and they grapple the blade between them. Belling forces Brenner onto the water, but the boat spins round behind him, and Brenner pushes Belling into the path of the spinning outboard blade, which cuts into him. The water goes crimson and Belling stops moving. The boat tows the corpse, which is still attached by its neck to the boat's mooring rope, out into the bayou. Caption: Fort McCallum Urban Warfare Training Site. A bomb disposal robot trundles along a mocked-up street on its rubberized caterpillar tracks. The robot carries an explosive charge in its mechanical arm. A truck is parked nearby with the legend Explosive Ordnance Disposal on its side. Inside the truck, two soldiers operate the robot.
You good? Get way over to that car, okay?
The second soldier operates a sophisticated keypad. Outside, the robot changes course.
And take it into the door.
The second soldier pushes a lever forward on his keypad and the robot's mechanical arm extends towards the car. It rolls forward slightly and sticks the explosive charge to the car door.
Okay, back out.
The robot reverses until one of its tracks collides with a stake in the ground.
Snag.
What?
Let's take a look.
The second soldier adjusts a camera on the robot, which relays an image to the soldier's monitor. It reveals the stake, which has a rope tied to it. The other end of the rope is tied to a naked human foot. The two soldiers gawp at their monitor in disbelief. Back at the houseboat...
What'd you say your name is?
Frank White.
You military?
Yes, sir, I am. I'm a sergeant at the Post Armory.
That's what I told you.
CID Agent Brenner.
And he walked out, and the next thing I know, you know, he's blasting away.
Well, you military boys got stories more full of holes than a target range.
Sorry, Pop. It's Colonel Ken at the base. Is there a Brenner here?
No.
I'm Brenner.
Thought you was what?
I'm both. Skunked you. Chief Yardley. Hey, Bill. No, man, it's over. Belling's dead. Okay. All right, I'll see you there. Thanks.
Hold on, soldier boy. I want you to tell me about this Mr. Belling's.
Soldier boy? Okay, Chiefy, if you have to know. I was planning to arrest him in the morning during weapons exchange. But I guess he got wind that I was part of the criminal investigation division. See ya.
Brenner salutes and the sheriff grins. Later, Brenner is stopped at the base by an MP.
Good morning, sir. Where to?
Urban warfare site.
He shows his ID.
You have business there, sir?
Yes, I do.
Very good, sir.
Now in civvies, Brenner drives his Ford into the urban warfare training site. An MP with a flashlight shows him where to park. Brenner puts the Ford in park and kills the engine. Colonel Kent, in an MP's uniform, walks towards the car as he gets out.
Hey, Bill.
Hello, Paul.
They shake hands and walk towards the crime scene.
What have we got here?
Tortured, raped, and murdered.
A naked woman's body.
Who found the body?
A bomb squad crew doing exercises. They called the tower. Tower called me. First on the scene was a PFC Robbins.
She a suspect?
She, so I sincerely doubt it.
Right.
I have six of my boys securing the scene. Nothing's been touched.
Putting on rubber gloves, Brenner circles the body, which is staked to the ground. He crouches down by the corpse. The woman's underwear is tied around her neck. He pulls the hair away from her face. It's Captain Campbell. Brenner remembers her laughing the other night.
Oh, no.
Brenner's face falls.
What is it, Paul?
I met her the other day. Damn. What a shame. Lovely, lovely lady. All right, let's see. We got some rigor here.
He touches her cheek.
Petechial hemorrhaging, which is consistent with asphyxia.
Strangulation, you think?
He looks at the underwear.
Well, I'm assuming that, but there's no tear in the panties. And no obvious sign of semen. Is that hers?
Yeah.
Kent points to Campbell's pickup. Brenner puts his rubber gloves away as they walk over. He spots a woman writing in a notebook nearby. He turns to Kent.
Why is she here?
HQ called her. She's a rape counselor. Her name is Sarah Sunhill.
The victim doesn't need counseling, Bill. She's dead.
Yes, but she's also a rape investigator. She was on her way to another assignment. She agreed to stay on for this.
Aren't we lucky?
Brenner opens the driver's door of Captain Campbell's pickup truck and looks inside.
Get forensics up here from Fort Gillem. Talk to Cal Seaver. He's a guy I work with. You got 50-yard grid around the body. You need resin casts of all the boot prints. See who was here and when, including disqualifying prints of you and yours. You also need records. Captain Campbell's personal and medical records, ASAP.
I already did that.
Sunhill.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sarah Sunhill, Paul Brent.
Also, I want you to book a Sergeant Dalbert Elkins at the Armory. He's the one who started that arms deal I was working on. She walked barefoot from here to where she died.
Why do you assume that?
The smudge marks on her heels and the asphalt. And where does she live? Victory Gardens. Now, where is that?
I believe that's off post.
Yeah, well, I have to go there.
I'll call the Burford police chief. He'll get a court order and meet us out there.
No, that's Yardley. I don't want to work with him. Let's keep it in the family, okay?
Well, now, you can't search her off-post house without getting a civilian search warrant.
Oh, come on, Bill.
You need civilian authority.
Kent takes Campbell's house keys.
Sometimes we got to protect Paul Brenner from himself.
Does she have family here?
Kent nods slowly.
Of course.
I suggest you notify them right away.
They stand to attention for Rivali.
You're kidding, right?
Kidding about what?
It's Elizabeth Campbell, Paul. She's his kid.
Oh, no.
Thought you knew.
No, I didn't. Damn. The general's daughter.
Yep.
Brenner nods grimly and walks off towards his car. As the first orange rays of the sun come up over the trees, a military helicopter flies by overhead. Brenner gets in his car and is surprised when Sunhill gets in the passenger door.
What are you doing?
I feel queasy.
Well, hop on, I'll burp you.
Drive the car, Paul.
Thought you said you were queasy.
Drive the car, Paul.
He shakes his head and reverses up the road.
Now look. I think I can help you on this one, but I don't want it to be awkward.
Awkward? Now, why would you think it would be awkward?
You're pouting.
This is not pouting.
Okay. Sulky petulance, then.
Wrong again. This is just thinking about Brussels, you know? We'll always have Brussels.
Where?
The capital of Belgium.
He puts his sunglasses on.
Why?
Why is it the capital, or why will we always have it?
He backs the car around to his left and stops.
Why was she murdered?
Well, possible motives for murder are profit, revenge, jealousy, to conceal a crime, to avoid humiliation and disgrace, or plain old homicidal mania, right there in the manual.
He puts his foot down and the Ford pulls away. They pass a sign warning of tanks and drive on to a large white-painted clapboard house. The Ford pulls up outside the house, the Space Saver front wheel still on the vehicle. Brenner and Sunhill take a moment to take in the building's impressive facade.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
They undo their seatbelts and go over to the front door. It's opened by a smartly turned out captain.
Hello. We're here to see the General, Warrant Officer Paul Brenner, Sarah Sunhill.
Oh yes, I'm Captain Albee, the General's aide. Colonel Fowler, the General's adjutant, will take you in. Please wait right here.
Captain Elby goes.
He's cute.
Oh, please. He probably practices a salute in the mirror for hours.
Please, come in. And thank you for coming.
General Campbell sits in his office looking tired and pensive. Colonel Fowler leads Brenner and Sunhill in past a cabinet of swords.
General, the CID investigators are here.
Campbell nods.
Warrant Officers Paul Brenner and Sarah Sunhill, sir.
My deepest condolences, sir.
Very sorry for your loss, sir.
Thank you. Please, be seated.
He gestures to some chairs. Sunhill and Brenner walk across the office and sit down. Fowler stands beside the general's desk.
First, I want you to know that you have my full cooperation. And the cooperation of everyone on this base.
Thank you, sir.
You understand the time element?
The time element, no, sir.
After 36 hours, the FBI will send in a task force to investigate. But we prefer to keep this an army matter. The general can keep a lid on it through tomorrow.
Once the FBI moves in, the media will be all over this base. And my daughter's...
He checks himself.
Captain Campbell's death. They'll turn it into a goddamn circus.
We'll do everything we can, sir.
I'm sure you will.
Campbell turns to face Brenner.
Look, let me be blunt. You're going to have to decide on this one, Paul. Are you a soldier or a policeman?
I'm a soldier, sir.
I'm counting on it.
Campbell turns and looks out of the window.
Sir, I met your daughter.
Really? When was that?
Well, it was just a coincidence, but she helped me change a tire.
That she could do. She could do almost anything. Her mother was the same way. Fix a tire, make a hell of a key lime pie, speak 5 languages. Extraordinary woman. 2 extraordinary women.
He looks over at framed photographs of Elizabeth on the office wall.
Goddamn waste.
Hands in pockets, he turns away to the window again. Brenner and Sunhill get to their feet.
Again, our deepest sympathy, sir. And if there's anything else we can do for you at this time...
Just...
The general searches for the right words.
Just find the son of a bitch.
Yes, sir.
Brenner and Sunhill walk towards the door. Brenner stops and turns back.
Sir, when I enlisted, I was underage. They sent me straight to Vietnam. And you were my commander. You were a captain. And I was so scared. And one day, when I was on watch, you came by and you saw the fear. You said, well, where are you from? And I said, Boston. And you said, did you know that last night the Boston Red Sox won against the St. Louis Cardinals in the 6th game of the series? And you just walked away. Well, I knew then that I was going to get through it.
Sunhill smiles. Campbell nods sullenly.
Boston lost that series.
Yes. But I made it home.
Sunhill eyes Brenner.
We'll find the son of a bitch, sir.
The general purses his lips thoughtfully. Brenner and Sunhill leave. Campbell nods to Colonel Fowler, who acknowledges the general's look and goes after them. As Brenner and Sunhill walk to the front door, Fowler calls after them.
Mr. Brenner.
Brenner and Sunhill stop and turn back to Fowler.
I understand you have special arrest powers.
Yes, sir.
But I'm going to ask, before you arrest anyone, you notify me.
Why is that, sir?
We don't like our personnel being arrested by outside people without our knowing about it. There are 3 ways of doing things. The right way, the wrong way, and the army way. See that in doing it your way, Mr. Brenner. You don't forget about the army way.
Giving nothing away, Brenner turns and walks outside, Sunhill following after him. Fowler walks to the doorway and watches them go. From his study, the general watches Brenner's blue Ford drive away. Later, in Elizabeth's office, Brenner and Sunhill are watching a video of Elizabeth.
Our job here at PSYOPS is to panic the enemy, to blunt his will to fight. A PSY operator must know the customs and habits of the enemy, the current dissensions, anxieties, and fears, to determine vulnerability. To engage the enemy, you must know the enemy inside out. You must fill him with fear. And not just fear of dying. Fear of grotesque wounds is much more terrifying.
Ugh, grotesque wounds.
I'll show you mine if you show me yours.
Colonel Moore walks into the office.
May I help you?
Brenner turns around.
Might I ask what you're doing in Captain Campbell's office?
It depends on who you are.
So comfortably ensconced in her office, I might add. Colonel Robert Moore, Captain Campbell's commanding officer here at PSYOPS, and you are?
We're from the Criminal Investigation Division. Warrant officers Sun Hill and Brenner.
Moore nods and raises an eyebrow.
And you're investigating
the murder of Captain Campbell.
Colonel Moore looks surprised.
And now that we know who you are, we'll need to speak to you, Colonel.
Of course.
I have a meeting.
He hurries away.
Something tells me we could file Colonel Moore under our last to know.
Later, Sunhill watches as Brenner picks the lock to Elizabeth's front door.
Are you married?
None of your business.
Right.
In the bathroom, they check the shower and the medicine cabinet.
Well, she wasn't a hypochondriac. She didn't dye her hair, she didn't have oily skin, and she keeps her method of birth control somewhere else.
In the bedroom...
Well, perhaps she required her men to wear condoms. Maybe you've heard that condoms are in fashion again because of disease. Nowadays, you have to boil people before you can sleep with them. Care for a bath?
He looks in an obsessively tidy wardrobe.
Oh, my... This was one squared-away soldier, equally prepared for a military ball or the next war in the jungle.
He shuts the wardrobe. Downstairs, he checks the answer phone.
Liz, hi. Pick up. It's Robert. I haven't heard from you, so call me, please.
Robert. Surprise, surprise.
Sunhill opens a music box which has a little ballerina pirouetting inside it. She spots a door, goes over and opens it, flicking a light switch reveals a flight of stairs leading down to a basement.
Paul.
He draws his gun.
Move aside. Man with a gun.
Pistol at the ready, he leads the way down the stairs into the basement. Looking round, they see a lot of household clutter. A recruiting poster on one wall shows a picture of a soldier in battle kit, under the slogan, Home of the Brave. They carry on down into the basement, and Brenner holsters his gun. He looks inside a metal cabinet, while Sunhill examines some ropes hanging up. Brenner looks over some shelves. There's nothing unusual. Some flower pots, a funnel, some baskets. He looks at the poster again.
There's nothing here. Let's go.
They head on up the stairs, and Brenner flicks a light switch. As he looks back into the basement, his eye is caught by some light shining from behind the poster. He flicks the light switch again, and the light goes out, then on again. He puts the main light back on, draws his gun and heads back into the basement, followed by Sunhill.
There's a false wall.
They walk over to the poster and Sunhill pulls it aside, revealing a sliding door behind it. She opens the door and Brenner steps forward, gun at the ready. The room beyond has a bed in it. Above it hang chains with handcuffs attached. Elsewhere, the room is littered with PVC S&M gear, whips, chains, and other sexually orientated stuff. Brenner holsters his gun again.
This is it.
They look round the room. A table has a vibrator and some condoms on it.
Oh, my God.
Brenner picks up a studded leather strap-on with a prosthetic penis attached. He puts it down, then wanders over to a cabinet. He opens it and finds it contains a camera, VCR, and a number of videotapes.
What have we got here? $10 says these are not the Lost Honeymooners episodes.
He takes a tape over to a TV and video and puts it in the VCR. Sunhill walks over and joins him. They see Elizabeth dressed in S&M gear knocking a similarly clad man about. Brenner fast forwards and finds a bit of Elizabeth whipping a man. Another clip, Elizabeth in a military cap, smoking a cigarette.
Well, how she died does appear to be linked to how she lived.
Sunhill gives him a look. He meets her gaze.
All right, what we need to do here is to hold on to these tapes till we need them. We empty the house, send this all to the CID lab, padlock the house. When we take our chances, but this is where the local police stay out.
Is this Paul Brenner speaking?
This is Paul Brenner, the courier army officer, speaking, not the cop.
The evidence of her killer might be on that tape. I don't have to tell you that.
There's enough evidence here to ruin the lives of everyone involved, including the general.
She looks back at the screen.
Now look, we take the tapes, we use them when we need them. Let's see how you do their job. And keep all non-military out of this, okay?
Sunhill nods. He stares piercingly at her.
Okay.
Good.
I'll call Kent.
All right, here.
Thanks.
He hands her his pistol and she heads on out. As she goes up the stairs out of the basement, Brenner finds a sack and puts the videotapes in it. Upstairs, Sunhill picks up the telephone in the hall and dials a number. Frustrated, she hangs up again.
The phone's down. I'm going to go use the cell in the car.
She walks through the garden. In the basement, Brenner continues loading his sack with tapes. Happy he's got them all, he heads out of the room into the basement. As he comes out, he's set upon by a man clad in a boiler suit and black balaclava. The man attacks him with a shovel. He's hit on the head and back and knocked to the ground. He rolls to avoid being smashed in the face by the shovel and kicks the man over. But before he can press home his attack, the man jumps to his feet and punches him in the face. The man takes the bag of tapes and runs off. Brenner makes his way out to the car, dabbing the bleeding back of his head with his handkerchief.
Paul?
Sunhill runs to him.
Paul!
Back on the base, Sunhill and Brenner sit in the Ford, waiting in a queue of military vehicles at a checkpoint. Sunhill's driving.
Did you make out a face?
Yeah. It was flat, steel, and used to clear snow.
Come on!
So did you ever marry that guy you're seeing on the side?
Paul, this isn't exactly the time to be...
Humor me. I'm near concussed. Now, did you or did you not marry the guy you're seeing on the side?
I was engaged to that guy. I was seeing you on the side.
Fine. So how is the boy, Major? Seemed a little annoyed the last time I saw him in Brussels with a pistol in his hand.
Sunhill puts her foot down and jumps the Ford up to the front of the queue, cutting up an armoured personnel carrier in the process. An MP leans into the window to talk to her.
Identification, please.
She shows it.
Are you working on the murder case, ma'am?
Yes, I am, and this is my father.
Please proceed.
Brenner grins and they drive on. They arrive back at the urban warfare training site. The place is now a hive of activity. A helicopter hovers overhead. Below it is a military ambulance. MPs and troops swarm all over everywhere. Still dabbing his bleeding head with his handkerchief, Brenner gets out of his car. Kent comes over.
What happened to you?
Went off post.
Without civilian authority.
My head paid the price for it.
And there you go. Per your request.
Is this her entire record file?
That's it. Come up with anything yet?
No, just a preliminary list of suspects.
Already? Who?
Everyone.
Well, you ought to start getting alibis.
Okay, how about you?
Home in bed when the tower called.
Aha!
Now fuck off, Paul. Where were you last night?
I was busy killing someone else. I didn't have time to kill two people.
A likely story. And you?
I went to the VOQ at 1900 hours. I worked on my Neely case report until about midnight, and then I went home. No witnesses.
Pathetic, the both of you.
Well, you should have invited me up to your room, then we could have had an alibi.
I would rather be a murder suspect.
Oh. Don't encourage her.
By the way, Cal Seaver's here.
Oh, good.
Now, look, Cal is the best forensic man around, but don't say anything about his hair.
What's wrong with his hair?
He doesn't have any.
Hey, Cal!
A fat balding man.
Shouldn't you be wearing a hat?
What the hell happened to you?
Well, you know, not everybody loves me as much as you do, Cal. This is Sarah Sunhill.
Hello.
How are you?
The entire world walked around this body. Paul, there's got to be 50 boot prints here.
Have you found the clothes yet?
Not yet. I figured he'd want some space, so I commandeered an empty hangar.
Good man. Have everything taken there.
Okay.
Is there any trace of semen on the victim?
I ran an ultraviolet. I can't find any.
The coroner will run vaginal, oral, and anal swabs, and we'll know about that in due course.
It is a strange rape.
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Well, a guy wasn't just a rapist. Excuse me. He was a premeditated killer.
Go ahead.
He set up a rape kit, tent pegs and ropes, and he used it.
Yeah.
Well, there are no signs of a struggle. And she was a strong woman. I couldn't find a bit of dirt under her fingernails. And how did he hold a gun on her and manage to tie the ropes? Unless it was more than one person.
Brenner looks at the body.
What are those marks on her cheeks?
Those were tears, Paul.
He sighs and gets up.
The panties under the rope as if to protect your neck from a burn. I mean, what's a little rope burn if you're going to kill somebody?
Sun Hill's good.
Oh, yeah. Sun Hill has spoken.
Brenner walks away from the body and looks around. The helicopter does another pass overhead. He looks towards a watchtower, then looking the other way, spots a black plastic bin bag flapping on top of a one-story building nearby. He begins walking towards it, then breaks into a run. Cal, Sunhill and Kent notice and watch as Brenner climbs up on top of some bins to get to the roof of the building. Brenner opens the bin bag and finds some clothes and dog tags identifying the owner as Campbell, Elizabeth. A truck full of troops is driven out past a watchtower behind a jeep. Some thunder flashes explode ahead of them. Brenner and Sunhill are in the watchtower questioning the female sentry.
Could you see the body from here, Private?
No, but I saw the headlights.
The headlights?
I hated that it was her.
You knew her then?
No, but, Captain Campbell was, she was real good to female enlisted.
How so?
She, organized meetings for us, and, see, there's a lot of shit, I mean, there's a lot of stuff if you were a woman in the army to, that you got to put up with, and, a lot of people don't like that we're here. Captain Campbell, she encouraged us, and, I'm sorry.
You're allowed to cry.
No, it's all right. It's all right. Now, what about the headlights? Now, didn't you think it was someone coming home or using the latrine or something?
Sometimes people go out there on a nice summer night to fuck.
Sunhill looks down.
Pardon my French. But that's what I thought the first time.
The first time.
The first time I saw the headlights was at 0300. They went away, and they came back at 0330. Then they went away again, and they came back at 0400.
Brenner looks round agitatedly.
Okay, thank you.
As Brenner and Sunhill descend from the watchtower, they see Kent with Chief Yardley and his deputy below.
What's going on, Bill? What are you doing here, Yardley?
You got a shitload of explaining to do, son.
May I ask what your official business is here?
My official business here, son, is to ask you why there's a bunch of MPs hauling furniture out of an off-post residence that belongs to a murder victim.
The family of the deceased Chief Yardley asked me to take charge of those items and transport them here. Sunhill, remind me to call General Campbell and suggest that I take charge of those items and transport them here.
You got it.
Jesus, Paul. You know what you need, Chief Yardley, if you don't mind my saying? A pair of them mirrored sunglasses for you and the little one. That'd really complete the picture.
Sunhill and Brenner share an open plan office on the base.
So, did you ever marry Major what's his name with a gun?
Yes, I did.
Well, congratulations. I'm extremely happy for you, Sarah, and I wish you both the best that life has to offer.
I filed for divorce.
Good.
They walk into a bar on the base. They draw suspicious looks from some of the patrons. Brenner indicates some seats at the bar and they sit down.
Thank you.
Colonel Fowler is at a table.
Two club sodas, please.
He spots them and his smile turns to a scowl. Brenner smiles at a soldier sitting at the bar. The soldier immediately leaves.
Let's go, boys! Come on, I have no place to go!
You should see her records.
And there's your boyfriend from the general's house.
Valedictorian in high school, super athlete. She picked West Point like her daddy did.
Now there's a guy who knows how to have a good time.
Captain Elby.
Paul, look at me. I think something happened to her there. Elizabeth Campbell was tops in her class and she went all to shit her sophomore year. She barely got through school. Senior year was better. She managed to graduate and get a degree, but she was never quite the same.
Brenner glances over at Fowler, making his way out of the bar with a female companion.
I thought you hated places like this.
I do. However, the murderer may be in this room, sitting all smug and shiny, until we walked in. And now maybe he's a little less smug and a little less shiny. And that's pretty cool, don't you think?
He grins and leans against the bar.
What about you? Well, I hope Brussels wasn't the last time you had a woman.
Oh, brother, here we go.
You know, I always thought that you chose to avoid a confrontation with my fiancé, like I wasn't worth the trouble.
The man threatened to kill me. I chose discretion. It's the better part of valor.
Weren't you decorated for valor?
Oh, please.
Sometimes you just gotta fight for what you want. Well, if you want it.
I received a bronze star for valor, Miss Sunhill, for charging up a hill that I didn't particularly need or want. And besides, I don't remember getting any encouragement from you.
Well, maybe I wanted you not to accept my decision to break it off. Maybe I wanted you to take me away.
So we're talking about telepathy here, not communicate. You know, let's just talk about this next week, okay?
Fine. Just one more thing.
Is this next week already?
You are such a goddamn sharp detective, aren't you? But you sure can't read yourself, and you sure as hell don't know a thing about women.
Renner spots Colonel Moore across the bar.
You know, you're very cute when I'm mad at you. However, if you'll excuse me, I'll take my anger out on someone else.
He gets up and goes after Colonel Moore, who's heading out of the bar. Sunhill sips her club soda. At PsyOps, Brenner wanders down a corridor to Colonel Moore's office. Colonel Moore stands staring out of the window, puffing on a cigarette. He turns as Brenner comes in.
Ridiculous behavior earlier. I'm sorry.
Well, we didn't exactly let you see it coming.
Liz was more or less my protege. At least I'd like to think she was. We were very close. Please sit down.
Did you work together on a daily basis?
Absolutely.
Did you,
play together?
What a truly excellent question. You see, here at PsyOps, that's one of the things that we teach. Threatening quietly. Think of the echoes inherent in those four simple words. Did you play together? Did you go out with her? Did you fuck her? Did you love her? If you did you love her so much that you murdered her?
I meant, did you play golf or tennis or checkers or something?
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't.
So now, we both know we're smart guys. Do you think I'm involved in this?
One way or another, yes, I do.
Then wouldn't it behoove me to retain the services of an attorney? I know a good one.
Two problems there. First, the obvious. There are no good ones. Second, you're not a civilian colonel. You're in the army. You have no rights to an attorney. You have no right to remain silent. And if you don't cooperate, I may have to put you in jail, and that would make me feel bad.
You see what you're doing here?
Looking for answers?
Of course that, but how?
How?
You're trying to make me like you. And you know what? It's working, I do. But now do you see what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to make you like me too. Do you like me yet?
Why did you strangle her?
Wrong, sorry. Not up to your standards. Did you go to college?
What do you think?
Moore recaps his pen.
I think you did not.
Why? Did I make a mistake in grammar?
Of course not. And even if you were to, I wouldn't be rude enough to point it out. No, you have this chip on your shoulder. Big one. Makes you good at your job, though, doesn't it? I would imagine. Holds you in good stead when you see those commissioned officers, those spit and polished college types, just waiting for you. You're the scoundrel in the rumple suit with the healthy disdain for the rules, just waiting to bring them down. Am I right?
Nah, I'm just here to kick ass, sleep till noon.
And you cover your inadequacies with a condescension for the more robust individuals around you. How am I doing?
Not bad. Robust even.
When did the event transpire?
0400, we think.
See that? My quick segue back to the case.
Subtle as a chainsaw. And where were you?
Snug in bed.
Witnesses? A wife? Girlfriend? Roommate? Hooker?
I'm divorced. I'm between girlfriends. I live alone, and I do not use hookers. I actually have absolutely no alibi whatsoever. Does that make me a killer? Or?
No. Makes you lonely and unpopular.
Very good. Condescending and clever.
A cigarette.
No, thank you.
Moore takes one.
Okay, so you called her machine. You're very concerned. What was this, jealousy, perhaps?
Perhaps not.
Moore lights his cigarette and blows out a plume of smoke.
Liz was my friend. I hadn't heard from her in a couple of days.
Okay, so as her friend, did you know anyone that she was involved with?
You mean sexually?
Yes, sexually.
She was seeing someone. Civilian. A fellow named Yardley.
Brenner frowns.
Police Chief Yardley?
No. No.
Okay.
The son. His deputy. Wes.
Yes, Wes. Yes, okay.
They'd been seeing each other off and on, if you'll pardon the pun, for a few months.
Okay, so look, it's obvious you were very close to her. We're just trying to find out what very means.
It means very. I was Liz's mentor. There was a trust. She was, yes, a passionate young woman, as well she should have been, but had I ever taken advantage of that, I would have lost the trust. So did I kill her? Of course not. Did I love her? I loved her very much.
He looks down and shakes his head.
Make of that what you will.
In the hangar, Cal commandeered, Sunhill opens an evidence box. It contains framed pictures, one of a cross-section of a human head, with the caption, "Psyops, it's a mind field," and a cover of Time magazine featuring General Campbell holding a little girl in his arms and the caption, "Fighting Joe Campbell reclaims the city."
This is what made him famous, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's the Letchworth City riots. The whole city was in chaos. The general quelled it. And then he brought in unarmed troops and his little daughter, just to prove it was safe.
It looks terrifying.
A reconstruction of Elizabeth's office has been built in the hangar. Brenner joins Kent and Sunhill in it.
Excellent work.
I'm going to head down to the morgue. The report should be in. You want to come?
Yeah, we'll meet you there. I gotta talk to Cal.
Cal!
Coming.
But how's Moore?
Complicated.
Cal, we got the dog tag latents back from the lab. The partial prints belong to somebody other than Captain Campbell.
Who's that?
Robert Moore.
Hello.
Brenner looks at the report. That night he drives his Ford up outside Colonel Moore's house. Inside, a fluffy cat jumps up on a sideboard. Brenner lets himself in and finds Moore in the kitchen.
Smells good.
The Colonel looks very surprised to see him and turns the sink tap off.
What are you doing here?
I'm here to ask you a question, Bobby.
And the question is?
He chops an onion.
Why were you so stupid as to leave your fingerprints everywhere? My answer, you panicked.
I teach panic, remember?
And?
Well, obviously, I didn't plan for things to work out this way.
Define things.
Look, Paul.
He throws down the knife.
May I call you Paul? I so enjoyed when you took the liberty of calling me Bobby. We are, I assume, still trying to outsmart each other. Obviously, Paul, I cannot tell a lie and say I know nothing about all of this.
He puts garlic bread in the oven.
I also, sadly, cannot tell the truth.
Because you think silence will save your ass.
Well, my ass, as you so delicately put it, is already in a sling, is it not?
You mean the sex tapes?
Moore stops grating a lump of cheese, leans on the worktop, and turns slowly to look at Brenner. He half smiles.
You're good. Good. Great question. Almost any answer incriminates me, doesn't it?
Yep. That's why I like it.
Yeah, so let's cut the bullshit.
Yeah, let's do that.
We both know I'm pretty much destroyed, don't we? Can you think of any compelling reason why Elizabeth should be destroyed along with me?
Brenner stares inscrutably back at Moore.
Can you? I can't. Paul?
Moore walks through into the front room.
I watched the two of you. On one of her tapes.
I don't think so.
You know, bluffing is the last desperate act of the weak, Paul.
I will not help you ruin that girl. She suffered enough. Leave it there.
I'm all you've got.
Moore puts a record on.
Wrong again. Hello, Captain.
Hello.
Captain Goodson is with the Judge Advocate's office. He's also my lawyer.
From now on, anything you have to say to Colonel Moore.
I'll say to Colonel Moore.
Now listen, Brenner. Don't think you can bully my client.
You know, I'm done bullying.
You're under arrest, Bobby.
Brenna cuffs Moore.
Conduct on becoming an officer. Cost Article 134. Disorders and neglect. Accessory after the fact. Conspiracy. Making false statements. And, Captain, you are on the verge of Article 98. Not compliance with procedural rules.
Captain Goodson watches Brenna bustle Colonel Moore out.
Can I help you, ma'am?
Just taking another look.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you.
Having shown the MP her CID badge, Sunhill drives her red Mustang on. The MP, standing by a military jeep, watches the car depart, then takes a drag on his cigarette. Later, outside the urban warfare training site, Sunhill stands leaning against the driver's door, staring into space. She looks over at the MP, then paces whilst talking into a dictaphone.
Is it possible the bag holding the victim's clothes was going to be picked up by her killer or by a third party?
5 Charlie, do you copy?
The MP picks up the jeep's radio receiver.
This is 5 Charlie.
He nods. Sunhill treads heavily across the concrete. The MP shuts the driver's door, starts the engine and leaves. Sunhill uses the dictaphone.
Maybe she was here for a secret rendezvous, a tryst.
On strips of plastic.
Maybe the rape fantasy was part of the thrill.
A shadow falls.
Now, I know she had a predilection for the gamier side of sex.
Two figures run.
Is there anything to the argument that Elizabeth Campbell picked that amounted to a nearly public place because it presented an element of...
Sunhill stops walking and whips her head round. Beyond the plastic strips covering bare window frames, the two figures sprint. Sunhill lunges for the driver's door handle and is bundled to the ground. She struggles to escape, but the men hold her down.
Hold that bitch down! Let me get in!
They're wearing balaclavas.
This is the army. So you tell Brenner you don't shit on your brothers.
Her nose is bleeding.
Rape investigator, huh? Want to know what it feels like? Maybe it'll make you better at your job.
Sunhill spots her assailant is wearing a silver ring with a heart-shaped design. He then leaps up and legs it away with his accomplice. Sunhill heaves herself up and gets into the Mustang. In a cell block, Brenner marches Moore up to a hatch and slams a pistol on the counter. A soldier manning the hatch fetches some
keys. Number 5.
Brenner pushes Moore past cells.
Got yourself a colonel this time, huh?
Shut up, Hawkins.
Brenner shoves Moore into an open cell, then pins him to a wall by the neck.
You're acting as your shrink, were you not? Were you not? The Elizabeth I met was bright and shining. The woman on the tape is a different lady! And there's a direct connection, isn't there? Isn't there?
He eyeballs Moore.
Are you going to pull my fingernails out now?
Teeth clenched, Brenner releases his hold and Moore moves freely away from the wall. He then steps threateningly up to Brenner and turns his upper body, showing Brenner his still manacled hands. Brenner obliges, unfastening the shackles. Moore looks at his reflection in a mirror.
What happened, sophomore, here at the point?
Moore turns his head sharply to meet Brenner's intense gaze. He looks away uncertainly and Brenner punches him against the wall.
You're a murderer or an accessory to murder. Either way, you're going to get burned at the stake. Nobody's going to bail you out.
He slams the barred door.
It was awful.
Striding away, Brenner stops dead in his tracks, about turns and walks back to the door.
It was awful. Go ahead.
Moore stares uneasily at the floor.
What, she violated a code? She cheated? She lied? What?
Worse.
Drugs.
Worse.
Rape.
Moore treads ominously up to the door and, staring Brenner directly in the eyes, brings his head close to the bars.
Worse.
What's worse than rape?
When you find that out, then you'll know everything, won't you?
His cold stare full of meaning, Moore presses his thumb onto Brenner's, then brushes his hand across the bars, his fingers bouncing from one to the next. Giving Brenner an almost threatening look, he turns and ambles casually to the back of the cell and sits down. Brenner blinks, then walks slowly back to the hatch and hands the keys in. In the cell, an exhausted Moore puts his head in his hands. Brenner drives past hangars.
Tell me what the hell happened, Bill.
Look, I'm sorry, Paul, but...
The MP claims he got a radio call to leave his post. I've got no record of that call.
Probably a dead end, but I'm gonna take it further.
I'm pulling up. Talk to me later.
In the hangar.
She's fine, Paul.
Who did it?
I'm okay.
Who did it?
Putting on makeup, Sunhill looks distressed. In a locker room, Brenner shoves Captain Elby against a locker. He's wearing a silver ring with a heart design. Later with Sunhill, Brenner punches Elby.
Stupid play, Elby. Rookie move. You should remember to take off all identifying jewelry before an attack.
I don't know what you're talking about. I told you I was in the O Club all night. She's crazy and you're crazy.
Sunhill spills coffee over him.
Sorry about that. You just can't get good styrofoam these days.
Okay, let's change the subject. What can you tell me about Captain Elizabeth Campbell?
Elby looks up.
What about her?
She was raped and killed.
You know what rape usually is?
It's a woman who changes her mind afterward.
Brenner knees him in the face.
Would you classify your relationship with Elizabeth Campbell as an intimate one?
You mean, was I fucking her?
Yeah, that is what I mean.
Yeah, I was. But that's all I took it for, you know, just some sport fucking. I didn't think she was going to run off and tell him.
Tell who?
The general. The bitch told the general.
Why?
Because she's a freak, and that's what freaks do.
What about the general and Captain Campbell? Were they close?
No.
Why not? I don't know. You like your dad?
My dad was a drunk, a gambler, and a womanizer. I worshipped him.
Yeah. Well, I think I've said enough.
Brenner slams his head against the wall.
You cooperate, and maybe we'll keep it out of the report.
He releases Elby.
You guys don't get it. With Elizabeth gone, the general has got a clearer field to settle some scores.
He leans closer.
And I'll be given the opportunity to resign. Maybe I can save my marriage, maybe I can't.
Oh, great, there's a Mrs. Elby. And what does she do, aside from wake up in the middle of the night screaming?
What do you mean by settle some scores?
Look, I told you I am done talking to you.
Hey, we just got started, Elby. I'm going to bring you up on charges for the assault on Agent Sunhill. See how you like 40 years of sport fucking in a military prison.
Brenner presses his pistol to Elby's forehead.
Okay. Dare me. I'm going to ask you one more time. What do you mean by settle some scores?
Okay.
Brenner removes his gun and holsters it. Elby's sweating in his vest. He winces.
When she was alive, he couldn't touch her without embarrassing himself. He couldn't touch any of us. Because you know she would spill all.
All.
I mean, imagine what it looked like. The general's daughter banging his entire male staff.
Entire male staff?
Yeah. Yeah, everybody. Well, at least most of them.
What about the sheriff's son?
No, that was just for show. She was pulling the longest military train imaginable. Right up the chain, she went through most of the general's immediate staff, plus the staff judge advocate, and people like me in key positions.
What about Colonel Fowler?
Colonel Fowler once told me he knew all about this, and that I was part of the problem. I think he meant that he wasn't.
What do you think about this, Agent Sunil?
I think it's insane.
Not really. Elizabeth once told me she was conducting a field experiment in psychological warfare. And that the enemy was Daddy.
He levels a disdainful stare at Brenner and Sunhill. Now the pair stroll down a prison corridor.
You okay?
Yeah, I've been better. God, Paul.
I know. Most of these officers are married. It's immediate grounds for court-martial. Their lives are over. But I'll tell you this. It's a hell of a motive for murder. How does it feel to have our suspect list multiply exponentially?
Well, at least we know who the guys were on the tapes.
Yeah, a bunch of creeps willing to risk it all for a piece of patch.
A piece of patch?
Sorry, darling. I just get back in the base and it dredges up all my old alpha male behavior.
Great. What's next? You're going to do a beer funnel and light your own farts?
Maybe. After we see Moore.
Oh, I can't wait.
They stop outside Moore's cell.
Where is he?
Colonel Kent.
Bill, where's Moore?
He was released.
What?
Restricted to quarters.
On whose orders?
On mine. Looked like he was having a damn heart attack, Paul. His lawyer came in, had a valid complaint. Now, you can't put an officer in common lockup.
He's a murder suspect, Bill.
Since when?
Since his prints are all over the goddamn tags.
Well, you never informed us he was a murder suspect. He was being held here for conduct unbecoming, not murder. I had no choice.
Bill?
I had no choice.
It's still dark outside. A sedan and a military jeep drive past a grand building with a colonnaded portico. In the orange glow seeping through blinds on the top floor, General Campbell paces behind his intricately carved desk. In an office just meters away, a grim-faced Colonel Fowler opens a ring box and contemplates the two silver stars in... The sedan and jeep pull up outside Moore's bungalow. Brenner and Sunhill get out of the car. Kent, in the jeep, climbs out and joins them at the front door. Brenner knocks.
Moore!
The window panes are shaking. He bangs on one. Sunhill looks wary. The blinds are down and a silhouette moves behind them. Baffled, Brenner bends down to get a closer look. Meanwhile, in the locker room, Elby, wearing fencing whites, puts on a face guard and polishes his foil.
Moore!
General Campbell sits behind his desk, smoking a cigar. He holds a figurine up to the table lamp. At Moore's bungalow, a cat slinks in front of the blind and paws at the glass, leaving smeary traces of blood. Sunhill gawps.
We're going in.
They draw their guns. Brenner kicks the front door in and, holding his gun to the fore, darts into the house, Sunhill and Kent entering behind him. A record spins. They follow the bloody paw prints. Two men fence, one landing his point on the face guard of his opponent, who topples. In the bungalow, the ginger cat springs off the windowsill and bounds through Brenner's legs, leading them into the kitchen. At his desk, Colonel Fowler smokes in deep reflection. General Campbell paints a small Civil War figurine. The victorious fencer removes his face guard. It's Elby. Brenner and the others follow the cat into the lounge, where Moore's lifeless body, pistol in hand, is slumped on a bloodstained sofa. General Campbell places a figurine into a cabinet with others. The record is finished. Moore zipped into a body bag. The bag is on a trolley, which is lifted by medics to waist height. In the kitchen, the ginger cat is put into a cage and carried away. Weary, Brenner walks into the room, pulling off bloodstained disposable rubber gloves. Portly bespectacled Cal Sievers leans over his shoulder.
The organics on Elizabeth Campbell came back. There was no sign of rape. What are your thoughts on this?
Apparent suicide, start pattern, close contact wound, and I don't buy it.
Well, I'll do a UV and check his hands for gunpowder residue. I'll let you know if I find any inconsistencies.
Sunhill's been listening in.
Colonel Kent!
Kent turns round.
Yeah?
He plods up to Brenner and folds his arms.
Were you aware of Elizabeth Campbell's extracurricular activities?
How do you mean?
You know what I mean.
Kent checks over his shoulder. Fowler enters.
There were rumors, innuendo. I always took it as... false bravado, you know, soldiers bragging and that sort of thing, but...
Well, there's more to it than that.
Sweating, Fowler steps up.
Mr. Brenner.
Paul turns to face him.
As soon as you're through here, we'll convene at the General's house to coordinate the release of the official findings.
What are you talking about?
Obviously, Moore was overwhelmed with guilt. We need to close up shop. Determine what evidence should be classified, release a statement about Moore's guilt and the suicide.
You don't understand, Colonel Fowler. This is my investigation, and it's still open.
Who the hell do you think you are? It's over. Over. You'd better start thinking about your career, you understand?
And you better start thinking about yours. You are running one lunatic base here. You want to mess with me, Colonel?
Kent puts his head in his hand.
Let's start gouging away.
Fowler stares over Brenner's shoulder at Sunhill, who gives an uncooperative look. Fowler turns his eyes back on Brenner.
You've been warned.
Brenner doesn't flinch. Fowler walks away and Brenner strides after him, followed by Sunhill. Outside, Fowler dons a forage cap and calls to Sheriff Yardley.
Move out.
Brenner glowers.
What are you doing here, Yardley?
The sheriff approaches.
Shouldn't you be out night-sticking the colored folk?
Brenner turns to Sunhill.
Wait in the car. I want to talk to him. Mm-hmm. Your son, Wes. We got to speak to him.
Sunhill gets into the Ford.
Apparently he was involved with the victim, but you neglected to mention that to us?
He's on duty when it happened. His partner can verify it, and we got tapes of his radio calls all night long.
Just the same. We'll be in touch.
He smirks.
Good night.
Renner walks away. In the car, Sunhill has found an envelope on the seat with documents inside. She's looking through them as Brenner climbs into the driver's side.
What is that?
The gods have smiled on you, Paul Brenner.
Oh, yeah? Why is that?
Because it's a West Point psychological report on Elizabeth Campbell and pages from her medical file, pages we were never given.
What does it say?
It says we're going to West Point.
A daytime aerial shot of the military academy, situated by hills and a stretch of water. Brenner and Sunhill move down a corridor, arriving at an office.
Yes?
A balding man with glasses.
Brenner and Sunhill, sir.
Come in. And talk loud. Terrible thing for a shrink to lose. Can't hear some of my patients half the time. Of course, considering some of my patients, maybe it's a blessing.
They sit.
Colonel Schlesinger, would you prefer being called Colonel or Doctor?
I prefer Donald, and I'm assuming you didn't fly up from McCollum to Bush yet.
No, sir, it's what I told you on the phone.
Yes, and I told you on the phone that I can't talk about Captain Campbell. Nothing has changed.
You were her psychiatrist?
And a poor one at that.
Okay. And she was, at the end of her sophomore year when she came to see you. She must have been about 20. She was in a serious depression.
I take it from your presence here, Lizzie's in some trouble again.
Not now.
That's good.
He smiles.
Well, she's too young to be dead.
Schlesinger looks at Brenner and Sunhill, who remain impassive, and his smile withers.
She was strangled, sir. Mock-raped and then strangled.
Schlesinger gets up from his high-backed leather desk chair and steps gloomily over to the window. His features suddenly crumple, and he shakes his head.
God damn it! God damn it! I couldn't help her, don't you see? I tried, but I could not unlock her enough to trust me. But you know what? I still can't talk about her.
Sunhill approaches him.
No, you can't. But you're angry, yes?
Of course.
Sometimes when I'm angry, I talk to myself out loud. Do you ever do that? Just sort of rant?
Brenner's intrigued. Schlesinger nods mournfully.
Yes. Sometimes.
Sunhill looks to Brenner, who nods.
Well, if you were to rant, and we happen to be in the vicinity.
Free country.
That's my thoughts exactly.
Later, the three of them saunter through a plant propagation area.
She sets the place on fire, our Lizzie does. Top woman here. Pretty as hell. Outdoes most of the men in the training run. At the end of her sophomore year, it was a big night exercise. There must have been thousands involved.
Armed soldiers troop across grassland, tanks in support. Bursts of flame illuminate the sky.
Lizzie got separated from her group.
She stands alone on a patch of bare earth. A Huey chopper passes overhead.
Found herself with about a half a dozen men.
The camouflaged soldiers leap out and one of them knocks Elizabeth to the ground with the butt of his rifle. They brutally rip her clothes off. Then one of the men raises his fist and strikes her hard across the face.
A very dark night. Not only were the men unknown to her, but they were also wearing camouflage.
Schlesinger shakes his head.
They raped her almost to death. Raped her all night long. Taking turns.
They tie her down.
Stripped her. Spread eagled her.
Her hands and feet are tied to pegs which are hammered into the earth. Her body convulses.
Nailed her to the earth with 10 pegs. Just had a whale of a time.
Naked, Elizabeth struggles against her captors, who stand triumphantly over her. One rubs his hand up and down the barrel of his rifle.
Threatened to kill her if she talked.
Schlesinger pots a plant.
Tied her underwear around her throat?
Yes.
A Huey helicopter with a nose-mounted searchlight passes over the rape gang, who scarp her. One soldier hangs back, staring down uneasily at the victim before leaving. Elizabeth's face is sticky with blood, sweat and dirt. Her lips tremble and she stares at the sky. Now a bright dawn sun shines through tall trees. On the bare soil where Elizabeth lies, boots and pieces of army clothing are scattered. She's still tied down and shaking. In slow motion, two soldiers arrive. One pulls out a waterproof to cover her, whilst the second man gets on the radio. The first soldier cuts the ropes, then turns and mimes making a call. The second man says, "I've got it." The first soldier holds Elizabeth's weakened hand.
Lizzie was hospitalized, treated for venereal disease, treated for pregnancy.
She's now strapped onto a stretcher in an area of grass, eyes glassy and still. Her face pale and badly bruised, her nose and mouth caked in blood. A soldier kneels over her, whilst a second guides a chopper into land. A third soldier holds up a flare. Elizabeth's stretcher is lifted into a helicopter.
By the time I got to her, she had gone away inside. Never let me get close.
Who were these guys? I need a name.
No. Sorry, medical ethics.
Brenner shoots a look at Sunhill.
I am going to finish my work here. I can't tell you what to do, but I'm going to go back to my office. Keys under the mat. You were to look up Lizzie's files. You might find an additional notation there with a man's name on it. Might be worth your while to snoop. Up to you. Free country and all that.
Brenner and Sunhill amble away.
Sorry I couldn't be of any help.
Schlesinger remains working in the greenhouse.
Beginning our descent to Fort Benning, ma'am.
Sunhill sits in the back of an open-sided Huey which banks over an airbase where Chinooks sit on the concrete apron. Later, she enters a darkened hangar-like building housing a swimming pool where soldiers jump from diving boards into the water wearing full combat gear. A man directs her to the changing rooms.
Get that woman out of the water! Now! Now, Ranger! Let's go! You can't get all day!
Female on the floor!
Female on the floor!
Female!
Sunhill walks past showers into the locker room where a few guys sit chatting.
Captain Bransford?
Whoa. Yeah, that would be me. What can I do for you, honey? Better yet, what can you do for me?
Bransford jiggles.
Well, dear, you can ask these other men to excuse us. Yeah, that's a CID badge you're looking at.
The other guys slope off. Handsome blonde-haired Bransford, wearing vest and boxers, stays put.
Looks like I picked the wrong woman to honey.
Looks like. I'm Sarah Sunhill, Captain. I'm a rape investigator for the CID. We need to talk about Elizabeth Campbell.
Right. Liz. Liz and I were classmates together at the Point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I only have just one question. How scared are you right now?
Bransford shifts.
I'm sorry, Miss Sunhill. Is it possible that you're in the wrong place?
Your heart's racing a little faster. There's a little ball in your throat. It's sticky under the arms.
Okay, I think that's enough.
You can sit your ass back down.
Sunhill looks calmly up at Bransford, who nervously pats his towel against his leg, then sits half smiling.
I know you weren't the leader.
If you say so, Miss Sunhill, but I really do not know what in the world you're referring to.
You're too weak to have started it. You're just a guy who's gotten by on his smile and his charm. It's a good smile, but you could never lead a rape.
Well, that sure is good to know.
Elizabeth Campbell was murdered 36 hours ago. Staked out with tent pegs and strangled. So I'm going to ask you my question again, Captain Bransford. How scared are you right now?
I was right here on the post, lady.
But you were right there 7 years ago on maneuvers. You were right there for the rape.
You can't prove shit.
That's not what Dr. Schlesinger's records say.
Yeah, okay. I went to see Schlesinger. And I told him a story that I had heard. That's what his records say, Miss Sunhill. It was just a story. Somebody else's story, and that's it. Understand?
Sunhill gazes into Bransford's burning eyes, trying to gauge him. She nods knowingly, then reaches into her handbag for a plastic evidence bag containing lacy knickers and throws it down before him. He scoffs at it.
What is that?
What does it look like?
Bransford knits his brow.
Well, it looks like underwear. Women's underwear.
Amazing scientific changes the last few years, Captain. Wouldn't you agree?
I wouldn't know.
Certain fields, it's been incredible.
you say so.
Like DNA. If it's there, it's there forever.
Bransford frowns.
But then you probably already knew that.
He stares at the underwear.
Those are hers, aren't they?
His expression troubled, Bransford slowly lifts his head to meet Sunhill's unflinching gaze. He remembers staring at Elizabeth before running off behind the other soldiers.
I tried to stop it.
He stares earnestly at Sunhill.
I did everything I could. But they hated her. They hated her so much. They hated that she was smarter than them. They hated being out there with someone who had to squat to piss. I tried to save her. I did everything I could, but I couldn't make them stop.
He looks tearfully at the floor.
Who were the others?
It was my recon squad. The names are in the yearbook. Liz was my friend.
Sunhill reaches along the bench and picks up the evidence bag.
Thank you very much, Captain, for your cooperation. Someone from CID will be in touch.
She chucks the bag into a bin. Bransford frowns.
What are you doing?
What does it look like?
What about the DNA?
What DNA? I bought those an hour ago. So long, honey.
Drained, Bransford buries his head in his towel. On a computer screen, a plan with a transparent 3D image of a woman's body lying spread-eagled on the ground. The body is surrounded by tens of different coloured footprints. A red print is targeted, then the image magnified and enhanced. In the CD hangar, bespectacled Cal examines an actual footprint captured on a plastic strip. Brenner on his mobile in a sunny residential area.
That's a positive match, right?
Yep, Paul. It's only a partial blueprint, but it's definitely Colonel Fowler's, and it's right next to the body.
Good. Good work. Now look, we've only got till the end of the day, then the feds are going to be all over us. Gotta go.
Goodson approaches.
Hi.
Look, I got a lot on my plate, Justin.
I just wanted to thank you for everything you did.
For what?
For leaving the medical records in the car.
Goodson and Brenner stroll through a park.
Now, did he instruct you to give me the medical records?
Well, not in so many words, but I think I knew his wishes. You know, anything that might help Elizabeth. I'm sure you know how much he loved her.
Not as much as he loved you.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Just something about the surprise way that you came in that night, the extra care he had in making dinner.
What do you plan on doing about it?
Not a thing. Other than to tell you that I'm sorry about more and to ask you for your help. Here, sit down.
A bench.
What exactly do you need to know?
I want to know about the recreation of the original rape.
I suppose that's what it was.
Okay, was it Moore's idea to do this, to kind of cleanse her of her past?
Oh, no, Jesus, no. She thought it up. He couldn't talk her out of it.
Okay, so he felt so bad that he killed himself?
Look, you and I both know that's not how this happened. And that is where they screwed up, whoever did this. Because they didn't know about Bob and me. And Bob could no sooner have killed himself than I could pull a chicken out of my ear. But these nefarious types, they don't get that. You know, they don't understand that. Affairs of the heart, way beyond them.
Okay, so he staged this thing, okay? He tied her up, he got rid of her clothes, what?
Yeah, but he also had to make the call to the general and play him the tape.
The tape?
Goodson swallows, nodding weakly. A dictaphone with a tape inside it sits on a desk. Brenner, wearing a uniform and peaked black cap, strides purposefully along a path leading to the general's office. Colonel Fowler, watching him from the top floor, turns to Campbell.
Joe. Brenner.
Campbell, at another window, looks over, then ponders. Brenner enters the building. Upstairs, Fowler lowers a blind. Brenner is escorted to the door of the plush office.
Paul, come in, please.
Campbell and Fowler remain standing. Brenner halts in the middle of the room.
Just wanted to say goodbye, sir. I'll be driving back to headquarters in the morning.
I'm leaving tomorrow, too. I'm taking Elizabeth up to Michigan to be buried next to her mother.
Campbell sits and lights a cigar.
Thank you for everything you did.
I understand you're still going into politics, sir.
The jury's still out. We'll see.
Brenner looks at Fowler, who stares back impregnably.
When you just thanked me for what I had done, what I wanted to say to you was I really didn't do anything. At least not anything right. I did a lot of things that were wrong.
You're not responsible for Moore's death, Paul. Any good investigator has to follow his instincts.
I'd like to talk to you about that, sir. We all know that Moore did it, then killed himself out of guilt.
Then we're all in agreement.
Then I got thinking, what if I was wrong?
What if it wasn't the same car three times, but three different cars?
That's certainly an interesting theory, but what difference does it make, since Moore is dead?
Probably none, sir. But it got me thinking about your daughter, and what she told me she taught.
Campbell eyes him warily.
Mostly, we fuck with people's minds, she said.
Okay, then. Thank you, Brenna.
You can go now.
Brenna briskly turns his eyes on Campbell, now standing.
Tell me about the rape.
But she wasn't raped. It was just made to appear that way.
The rape at West Point.
Campbell blinks.
It was kept confidential for the good of the Academy.
And the Army. And it was best for Elizabeth that way.
You were in Germany when it happened.
Berlin.
I was stationed there. I came back as soon as I heard.
We flew all night.
And you went straight there from the airport?
Of course.
No meeting first.
Fowler looks sideways at the general.
Seems Mr. Brenner is very well informed.
It was in her psych record, sir.
It didn't happen that way.
George, he's right. The meeting did come first.
He paces.
It was 7 years ago. The details get confusing.
It was nothing. It was just a quick briefing in a hotel near the point. General Sonnenberg, he was very sympathetic.
A flashback.
I want justice for my daughter.
I would give anything if this had never happened. But it did. And I'm trying to tell you the reality of the situation. We'll never find them, so we'll never know who did it. But we do know this. A co-ed academy is a good call, a necessary call. Better one unreported and unvindicated rape than to shake the foundations of West Point. To cast suspicion on 1,000 soldiers who did not gang rape a woman that night. Now all you have to do is convince your daughter that she, the academy, the army, and the cause of equality would be best served if she just forgot about the whole thing. These are the times we live in, Joe.
In the present.
He was right. If it had gone public, it would have permanently damaged women in the military.
Campbell reclines on a sofa.
It would have destroyed West Point. It was an untenable situation.
Is that what you told Elizabeth?
Not in so many words, no.
Brenner watches him carefully.
She was in no condition to understand that then. I simply tried to tell her that I loved her.
He meets Brenner's icily attentive gaze.
I loved her very much.
In a hospital.
Daddy loves you. And he's so proud of you.
Elizabeth lifts her head.
Rest now. Try not to think about it anymore. Listen to me. I only want what's best for you. Trust me.
Do you? You always did.
Elizabeth nods her battered head. Fowler looks into the private room.
Then don't ever think about any of this again.
She stares.
I know. It was an awful thing. A terrible, terrible thing. But thinking about it won't help it. So...
He attempts to smile.
Close your eyes.
Elizabeth looks petrified.
It never happened. None of this ever happened.
His expression as hard as his words, the general leans in towards his daughter, who recoils. He kisses her gently on the forehead. His lips linger on her skin. Then he takes her hand and squeezes it tight. Elizabeth fixes him with a look of frozen terror. Fowler lowers his eyes and walks away. Back in the office.
Not my finest hour.
You are just doing what you said. Trying to protect her.
I did what I had to. What I thought best for everyone concerned. There was nothing else that could have been done. We never would have found them anyway.
Brenner takes a piece of paper from his jacket.
Here you are, sir.
What is that?
Names of the perpetrators by associate agent Sunhill found with minimum trouble. Apple pie, sir.
Campbell rises.
That's just brilliant.
Each man will be looking at 20 years, sir.
I think you'd better go now.
Fine. We'll just deal with the phone call issue tomorrow, if you prefer. Perhaps before your flight.
What phone call issue?
Well, I have excellent reason to believe that Moore phoned you at 0300 hours the night of the murder.
Campbell eyeballs Fowler.
Why in the world would he have done that?
Well, if I'm right, sir, I think the whole recreation of the rape was Elizabeth's idea. God knows why she did it. Perhaps because you were going into politics, she thought this was her last chance. But I think she got Moore to put her in exactly the same position that the rapist did 7 years ago. This time you weren't in Germany. And if I'm right, she would have wanted you to see firsthand what you covered up.
That never happened.
The dictaphone.
A gift from Moore's lawyer.
Dad, this is Elizabeth. I need to discuss something extremely urgent with you. You must meet me at the Mount site no later than 0330 hours. I have an answer to your ultimatum.
Campbell pinches the bridge of his nose.
It's hard to argue with a recorded voice. I'm sure that was part of her plan.
What does she mean by an ultimatum, sir?
I gave her two options. Resign her commission or agree to some sort of therapy. If she rejected both of those, I would instruct the staff judge advocate to investigate her misconduct and draw up charges for a general court-martial. I'm sure that seems callous to you.
So you drove out to the Mount site?
Of course. I needed an answer.
Elizabeth staked out on the ground.
Here's the answer to your damn ultimatum.
Jesus Christ.
Do you see what they did to me? Do you see? Don't turn away, you coward. Come closer, get a better look, see what they put me through.
What the fuck do you hope to accomplish?
She's naked.
There's a rope around my neck. You can strangle me if you want to, or you can just cover it up like you did before.
Have you gone completely out of your mind?
She's tearful.
It happened. I want to hear you say it happened.
I don't give a damn what happened to you 7 years ago.
Whatever hurts you makes me stronger. That which does not destroy me makes me stronger.
You can't hurt me anymore.
His brow is furrowed.
We're even.
It's fine with me. You never helped me!
Campbell walks away.
Daddy, please don't go. Come back. Please. Please don't.
Campbell leans on his car, head bowed. The general gets into the sedan and drives away. Elizabeth's face is racked with anguish, a flashback from the West Point rape. In the present.
So you were in the second car. Which means Colonel Fowler must have been in the third.
Fowler looks over at Brenner, then treads closer to him.
You couldn't expect the man to deal with his own child. And she was screaming such vituperations at him.
Campbell stares into space.
Of course not.
Fowler looks uneasy.
So he called me. And he asked me to deal with it. I went. And I found her dead.
Campbell hangs his head. Brenner frowns.
You found her dead?
Of course. But she will never get me to testify against the general.
Campbell looks puzzled.
What?
I've been by Joe Campbell's side too many times. Looked death in the face with him too many times. I'll not back down now.
What in God's name are you talking about?
It wasn't like she didn't give him reason.
George, for Christ's sake!
And then, when we realized she was fucking everybody, from Bill Kent to Jake Alby, it was too late for official action.
Colonel Fowler!
We would have had to ask for all their resignations.
Kent.
Strangulation, you think?
Then resign ourselves.
Brenner sits.
We need civilian authority.
What happened to you?
Fowler shed a tear.
You had no other choice, sir.
You think I killed my own daughter?
It'll die with me, Joe.
Brenner remembers.
Bill, where's Morris?
He was released.
Oh my god.
On the road, Brenner makes a call.
Seaver.
Cal, it's me.
You arrest Fowler?
No, let me speak to Sunhill.
She's not here.
She got in an hour ago, then said she was going back out to the crime scene.
She go out there alone?
No, sir. She took the big dog with her. Captain America himself.
Kent. It's his idea. He wants you to meet him out there.
Yeah, of course he does.
Brenner slams the phone down. Now in fading light, he motors into the deserted urban warfare site and skids to a stop. He leaps out of the sedan and runs across the muddy ground. Kent and Sunhill are inside the training area.
Sunhill!
She looks across at Kent, who crouches down on one knee.
Bill, we've been through this whole place a dozen times before. We're not going to get anything else out of this.
Kent sees Brenner jogging towards them past tank traps and dummy soldiers. He carries an automatic.
Paul?
Sure, sure. Paul.
Brenner stops a few meters from Kent.
I think the three of us need to go back to your office and talk.
I've always been an outdoorsy kind of guy. Kent. Why don't we talk here? That is, if we have anything really important to talk about. I thought you'd do your job, pin it on more, then move the fuck on. But I forgot you were the nastiest rat in the shithouse. Just goes to show you.
Why'd you do it?
Kent looks at her.
Why? Well, you tell me. You're the expert.
I think this was a woman giving it out all over the post, and the one man who cared about her, the one who's willing to risk it all for her, is a person she doesn't want. And that's because she couldn't want anybody.
Brenner narrows his eyes as Kent removes his peaked hat. Rain begins to lash down.
See, I just wanted to be with her forever. She owned my heart.
He recalls the murder scene.
She tormented me. She became my obsession.
He watches Campbell depart, then approaches Elizabeth.
So I followed her and found her out there on the range, on display.
She lies naked.
Elizabeth!
Get out of here, Bill. Get the fuck out of here. Don't come back. I know you won't. You can't be around. You'll ruin it all.
He halts.
What are you doing out here? What's all this about?
What did my father send you? Is that why you're here?
No.
Did he send you to shut me up?
No. No.
Well, this time I won't be quiet. This time I'm going to tell everything. About him. About you. I'm going to tell your wife. I'm going to tell your kids.
He holds her face.
Don't touch me. Get your hands off me.
He goes to kiss her. In shock, Kent slowly blinks.
You were repulsive. You're a disgrace. You're not a soldier. You're not even a man. You're just a fuck. I fuck you.
She bares her teeth. His features twisting angrily, Kent presses both hands firmly against her throat. The picture flicks from Kent grimacing as he throttles Elizabeth, to him in the present also looking pained, then back again. Elizabeth's arms shake, then go limp. Kent gives a final push, then releases his hold and stares at her dumbfounded. Now he lifts an automatic.
Come on, Bill, let's get going.
Come on.
Kent tosses the weapon onto the ground at Brenner's feet.
I'm all yours, Polly.
Whoa!
Before you come any closer, don't you want to know where you're standing?
Where am I standing?
In a minefield.
Ah, come on, Bill.
I buried some bouncing Bettys. Any personnel. You buy that? Oh, you're reasonably safe here, Paul, but little miss can't be wrong over there. She's deep in the Hurt Locker. You remember how the Betty works? First man trips the primary, mine shoots up, rest of the column walks into the blast, heads are removed or limbs, whatever.
Backtrack the way you came.
You know, it's amazing what a load of shrapnel will do to flesh and bone.
Sarah, you're fine.
God?
She takes a tentative step forward.
Fine!
She jumps.
Scared you, didn't I?
You're an asshole, Kent!
Come on, Bill, it's over!
Kent tips his head back.
Yeah, it's over.
He remembers stroking dead Elizabeth's hair.
But not the way you think.
Kent steps onto a small three-pronged device sticking out of the mud. Brenner notices and runs towards Sunhill. Kent takes his foot off the device and a mine shoots into the air in slow motion. The mine explodes at head height and a sheet of flame rips through Kent, the force kicking him into the air like a dummy. Brenner bundles Sunhill to the ground and debris rains down onto them. A sunny day outside the colonnaded brick building.
Intel, Allerton! Freezer!
Fowler and Campbell stride towards the entrance past MPs. Campbell salutes. In the CID hangar, Brenner's watching a video.
The human eye can distinguish 16 shades of grey. A computer image processor analyzing a fingerprint can distinguish 256 shades of grey, which is impressive. The human heart, mind, and soul, however, can distinguish an infinite number of emotional, psychological, and moral shadings. In PsyOps, we deal with the blackest of black and the whitest of white.
Campbell.
Thank you.
Brenner rises swiftly and stands to attention.
At ease, soldier.
Campbell steps through metal uprights into the mock-up of Elizabeth's office.
Is Colonel Fowler coming?
No, he's taking some much-needed R&R. He's a good man, George. A good man and a good soldier. Sometimes the lines get a little blurred, but when push comes to shove, he'll do what needs to be done.
And what is that, sir?
Why, Seymour called him, of course. And that I was never out there. He'll do that for me. Even if it means his career. Like a good soldier. Nothing is gained by my involvement. A letter of commendation will be inserted into your file. In recognition of your exemplary work on this case.
Campbell walks off, heading for the huge hangar doors. Brenner glances up thoughtfully at the ceiling. Campbell stops and turns around.
Remember when I asked you if you were a cop or a soldier?
Yes, sir.
Well, you're a soldier, Paul. And a damn fine one.
Campbell stands to attention, then brings his right hand swiftly to his temple in a solemn salute before turning and moving towards the doors. Brenner strides after him.
General Campbell.
Campbell halts.
You're wrong. I'm a rotten soldier.
Oh? And why is that?
You really don't get it, do you? The only mind Elizabeth wanted to fuck with was yours.
Campbell eyes him suspiciously.
And you still don't get it.
Shaking his head.
I've done nothing wrong.
He stalks off.
You killed her.
Campbell about turns. Brenner approaches.
What did you say?
7 years ago in that hospital room, when you told her to just forget about it, you killed her.
Kent killed her.
No. Kent just put her out of her misery.
Campbell scowls.
I once asked Moore what was worse than rape. Now I know. Betrayal.
I loved Elizabeth. But there were larger issues to consider.
You traded her trust for your career. You made a deal, didn't you? You kept silent and they gave you another star.
You watch your mouth, Brenner.
I'm going to say that in my report. That you knew she was out there, that you went out and talked to her and left her there to die.
You don't have the balls.
Oh, you're wrong, sir. Because that's just about all I have left.
You do that, and you can kiss your career goodbye.
I'm going to have you court-martialed, General, under Article 32 for conspiracy to conceal a crime.
Campbell stares uncomfortably at the floor. Brenner stares defiantly at the general, who turns, his head bent and expression grave, to face the great hangar doors, which slowly draw back, letting the daylight flood in over them. Brenner turns, standing next to Campbell on the threshold of the hangar. Outside, a coffin draped with a Stars and Stripes flag is carried towards the rear of a transport plane.
When this all started, I told you that we would find the son of a bitch, sir.
Brenner looks straight ahead.
I never expected that the son of a bitch would be you.
Campbell marches to the coffin. Sunhill watches from her car. The honor guard aim into the sky. The folded up flag is passed to General Campbell. Lines of troops salute slowly and in fluid unison. Brenner, in turn, lifts his flat palm to the peak of his cap. The dark coffin is borne by six soldiers in dress uniform to the aircraft's open cargo bay. Campbell follows them at a respectful distance, marching with a slow, deliberate step, his impenetrable gaze fixed on some point in the distance. Now a series of photos of Elizabeth, first as a young girl, then growing gradually older, showing her finally as an attractive, smiling adult. The general walks inside the plane. Now a more recent photograph of Elizabeth, bright-eyed and in her army uniform. In the hangar, a CID agent supervises soldiers in the clear-up. Framed photographs of Elizabeth are wrapped in plastic bubble wrap. The cargo plane taxis away. With sorrowful eyes, Brenner lowers his hand from his temple and swallows. The picture fades to black, and white captions appear. General Joseph Campbell was court-martialed and found guilty for his involvement in the cover-up of his daughter's rape. He subsequently withdrew from public life. Today, nearly 200,000 women serve on active duty in the military services. My sense is we are on a countdown to the days when there won't be a position in the military that women can't and won't occupy. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. ITFC audio description by John Walskill and Tom Worley.
You got to ride it like you're flying by your ticket at the station on the Rock Island.